No, seriously, listen, if there's ever anything I can do for you, or more to the point, to you, you let me know, okay?
Can you hammer a 6-inch bike through a board with your penis?
Not right now.
A girl's gotta have her standards.
Susan.
That is a very smart girl.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Throwback Reviews Podcast. This is episode 20, the big 2-0. And this week we are doing the 1985 film Real Genius. But before we get into that, let me go around and introduce the host, starting with the man that's been missing in action for quite some time, but we're glad to have him back, Steve McLaughlin, the door-to-door geek. What's up, Door?
Hey, Sean. Man, I ain't gonna lie, man. I was like physically beat down from going to Columbus, Ohio and OLF. Just battered, beaten, torn down, worn out, and I can't wait to do it again.
Well, about a year.
Yeah.
And well, maybe I can join you next year. I didn't make it this year, but.
Well, no, I actually have a Northeast GNU Linux Fest, which should be April 5th up in Boston.
Ah, yes. You tried to get me to go to that one last
year. Sure did. Cause I seriously didn't think it was that far from you. Then when I looked at it on the map, I kind of shut up.
Yeah, I think it's about just as far, if not
literally,
further, than going to Columbus.
Yeah, it was
Columbus was like a 5.5-hour drive for me.
Yeah.
So, but maybe I'll make it to Ohio next year. We'll have to see what happens.
Sweet.
And also with us, as usual, is the collector of collections, Rob Flack-O'Hara. What's going on, Rob?
What's going on, everybody? We're kicking off week 3 of the furloughs. We're having good times around the Flack household here.
Yeah. Speaking of which, you made something last night, didn't you? You were a little creative. You want to tell us what
you
made?
Did you see that online? Yes. You know, when I was a kid, I remember one time did you ever make the Valentine's boxes? Like when you were a kid, you know, to take to school.
You'd walk around class and drop them in everyone's
room. Right. Yeah. And I remember one time I made a robot and I went, you know, before I went to sleep and I woke up the next morning and my dad had built like a bigger robot than I had, you know, out of like Tupperware glasses and boxes and all this stuff, you know. And so I always thought that was kind of cool, you know. So last night my son came down. My son is turned into a little inventor. He came down. We have this old, like a, you know, a dime store, like a $20 camcorder or whatever, and he's made a holder for his bicycle helmet to put this on, so he now has a bike cam. And,
nice.
He's doing this little, he's on this little inventor kick right now. So he comes downstairs and he says, hey, I need a cardboard box. I'm going to make my own personal, a one-person movie theater. And we're like, okay. So we got him a box and he comes back later and he's got this cardboard box on his head and he's cut out a little flap for his iPod. And so he's like watching YouTube videos with a box on his head. And I'm like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, you know? And so he goes to bed and I'm like, I'm going to build a better one. And so, so I got a bigger box so I could put my iPad in one end. And, then I made cut out some chairs, you know, cause his didn't have any chairs. And I tried to make them scale so I could put Star Wars people in the theater. Now everybody has told me that saw the pictures, I should have put, Mystery Science Theater like silhouettes in there, you know, but, you can get your whole head in this thing. I watched about half a movie earlier and, I'm planning on later adding some computer speakers to the back of the box for some surround sound. And, I'm really lonely right now, guys. I'm really bored and I'm ready to go back to work. I never thought I would say that, but, my wife came down and she's like, you know, I got my head in this box and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm watching a movie in this box. And she's like, oh my, she's decided I need help.
Well, she's probably, you know, glad it's not you teaching the cat karate like you were doing last week.
That's true. My cat is, I don't even know how that got started. I think the cat was sneaking up on me and I snuck up on it, you know, and then my wife's like, are you teaching the cat karate? And then I'm like, yes. Yes, I am, apparently. So, yeah, good times during the furlough. I think, I don't know what we'll be doing by next week.
We needed video of that, okay? I don't believe it happened.
Didn't you put something on Vine?
There was a quick Vine of me, but here's the thing is that the cat is not a good, she's only good at offense. Like, she'll sneak up on you and stuff, but when you run after her, then she just gives you that look, like, what are you doing? She just lays there, you know, so I don't know. We'll work on it. She's no Cobra Kai.
Will you let us know how that training goes?
I will work on that. If this furlough goes on much longer, there could be a whole separate podcast of things I'm up to.
Right. also with us, we have another special guest here. We have Doug McCoy. You might know him from the Retroist site. He also has a segment on the Retroist podcast. He also has his own podcast. He's got a few on the McCoy cast with us. Doug McCoy, what's going on, Doug?
Not much. I'm a little homesick now to hear that Dor had been in my hometown. I hadn't realized that's where he was. So I'm a little homesick, and I'm a little frightened too to hear that Flack is making robots and taking them to school. Kind of reminds me of that Far Side cartoon, you know, where Gary Larson has the kid making a killer robot in metal shop class. So if anybody could do it, I think Flack could. So I'm kind of wondering what stories we haven't heard yet.
Well, my wife, pretty much, yeah, she takes away all the good stuff. Like, I you know, I have to build all these things, but I'm not allowed to use scissors. And then all the knives disappear, those sort of things. So I'm kind of limited in the utilities that I get to use.
But if you weren't, imagine what you would do.
Give me two more weeks.
Just keep checking Rob's Facebook account, and I'm sure you'll see some stuff coming up. But, well, Doug, we're glad to have you. Hey. Definitely glad to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
This was great
to be here.
Yeah, this was a movie that you actually, you and I had talked about a few months back. You had gotten a hold of me and talking about the cast and everything. And you said, hey, if you ever do Real Genius, I'd like to come on. I don't know if it was before or after we did Top Secret, which I have a question for you on that. We'll get to that in just one second.
Okay.
But before we do move on, I do want to just make an announcement. If you haven't heard already, we have started a retro podcasting network, and it is called Throwback Network, and you can find it at throwbacknetwork.net. You can go there and check it out. Doug is on there with all three of his podcasts. We have, obviously, Throwback Reviews is over there. Rob has just started a new vidcast, I guess you'd call it, Sprite Castle.
It's a tube cast. That's what someone told me. If you put it on YouTube, it's a tube cast.
Oh, okay. Well, tube cast. we've got an Atari podcast on there. Ferg, who was just on last episode. Ferg from the Atari 2600 Game My Game podcast. He's on the network. The Intellivisionaries, new podcast about the Intellivision gaming system. They have one episode out, but you got to check it out. I mean, they really sound like they know what they're talking about with this Intellivision. I never had one, but it's very interesting. I love hearing about retro gaming systems.
So what you're telling me is I'm inadequate because I'm the only one on the show that only does one show on the network.
You've got your own network, don't you?
Yeah, you've got
your own. I know, but it's not the same.
Well, I don't know. I guess you have to get creative and think of something.
You
have a...
TV
do a whole show. No. A whole show for Sit and Spin. Like
there
different
you
adventures for your
yes,
Sit and
but
Spin.
The show would constantly sound like this.
And then,
yeah.
That's got to be a tube cast of doors sitting on a Sit and Spin, spinning around.
Industrial
gotta,
strength.
Yeah, and you got to have one of those big lollipops that you would see someone have back then spinning around.
Now, do you mount the camera to where, like, door is stationary and everything else seems to be spinning, or would you put it where door just comes around every,
both.
You know?
No, stationary. That way, everybody gets sick. Everybody involved is going to get sick. Door's going to get sick. The viewer's going to get sick. It'd be fun.
I'd watch it.
Yeah, so, but yeah, check out Throwback Network. We got really good casts over there. And all the casts that are in the feed, you can listen to the episodes on the website. And there's links to everybody's home website as well to subscribe
question,
and
Sean,
stuff like that. Yeah.
Do you have a master feed where you just basically can only, where you it will let you only subscribe to one feed but get everything off of that network?
I do. But it's not live right now. I need to figure out. There's some wrenches I need to turn first.
Because that's the feed that I want.
Yeah. That may become available. I'm working on that right now. I'm still waiting on the old Slowpoke iTunes. And but that if that does become live, I'll let everyone know about that.
Perfect.
So and you say you had two questions?
How much wood could a woodchuck chuck? It was only one. It was only one. I'm sorry.
Okay. So yeah, that's that. So what I did want to ask you, Doug, is we kind of talked about this last week. I didn't know if we had discussed doing Real Genius before or after Top Secret, but when you and I were talking, you had said, oh man, I hope you guys are easier on Real Genius than you were on Top Secret. And I have to say, I don't think we were that bad, but if anybody was, it was probably me, because I know Dor and Steve both had, you know, fond memories of this movie beforehand. Was I bad on it, Doug?
I can't remember who it was, because that was, I think, like, I found you guys about four episodes in. And so, you know, I listened to four episodes in a row, and I think Top Secret was one of those. And so I hadn't really learned you guys yet. So you're fortunate, perhaps, I guess, or that I can't ID the culprit. I just remember one of you, or maybe even two of you, just not being overly fond of it. And I love that film. I think it's stupid. I think it's cheesy. I think everything you said about it's probably true, but I still incredibly love it. And wasn't angry, but I was just like, what are you guys talking about? You know, so.
I will say, I said that movie was fantastic because it is.
Yes, there you go.
There was just too many scenes in the movie that literally made me belly laugh as a child and as an adult, which not too many movies
sure.
can do.
And there's plenty that don't work, but there's some that are just fantastic, you know? And so I don't know. You can't be too hard on it, I think, because for what it does right, I can give it a pass for what it does wrong. So,
yeah. Well, I it probably was me. I wasn't my favorite, but I mean, really, the whole idea of this podcast in itself is just kind of going back and, you know, in a sense, finding out what still stands up, but how your feelings have changed about them. Sure. You know what I mean? And in a non-serious way, you know, like there's certain movies, like I'll be like, wow, I really loved that as a kid, but man, that movie sucks watching it as an adult. Yeah. Like I kind of try to do it as if I didn't see it before, sure. You know, try to look at it as, all right, I'm viewing, how would it be if I just viewed this and my kids were watching it and they loved it and I came in, I was watching it instead of me being that kid. But yeah, I mean, it's all in good fun. I think really the only episode where there was a movie that someone really just didn't like the movie and probably dissed the whole movie was Steve C on the Over the Edge.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he really didn't like that
that's
movie.
Right, that's right.
So, but I don't know. It's not an inspiring movie, but it was just one of those movies as a kid I watched and I just remembered it. And but really, I was just kidding. I knew it was me. I was definitely I'm the culprit that was probably like
that's
this
okay.
movie.
I forgive you. I can just be a little sensitive about Val Kilmer. You know, that's it just, you know, so I'll acknowledge my part in the disagreement here. I'm just a little touchy when it comes to Val.
Well, I'm with Doug. I think I had just found the show right before that episode, or right when that episode came out. And you guys, I think I've said on the show before, I'm not a huge fan of flying, and I had just flown somewhere, so I was flying back, and I loaded up my entire phone with podcasts, and so I had just found Throwback Reviews, and so I'd got all the podcasts, and I'd listened to. Did you do Smokey and the Bandit? Was that an early one? Okay, I think I'd listened to that. And I was like, all these guys are great. So, and I was like, and now they're doing Top Secret, one of my favorite movies. This is going to be fantastic. And I'm on the flight, you know, and I have my arms crossed and this dour look. I'm like, boy, these guys are going to get it when I get back. I'm going to, I don't know who these guys
think they are. Punching the headrest in front of you.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, well, I felt the same way about Val Kilmer until Top Gun.
The old Top Gun.
Anyone in that movie, a very bitter taste develops from that movie.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant that made them all better.
No.
You're saying that put them into your danger zone?
Yeah, exactly. But then with The Saint, it kind of went back up.
If you ever listen to our Never Seen It episode of Top Gun, you'll know that I had never seen Top Gun, actually, until just a couple of months ago. So, fortunately, I never had the spoilage. Val was never spoiled for me by Top Gun. I can understand, though, how that might have, you know, changed your opinion of him.
Yeah.
Anyways, Flack, why don't you give us our summary of Real Genius?
Well, 15-year-old Mitch Taylor is a genius who has been handpicked by Professor Jerry Hathaway of Pacific Tech to join Hathaway's team of brainiacs who are working on a portable laser project. Once he arrives at Pacific Tech, the young freshman teams up with several other students to complete work on the laser. Wacky college pranks and hilarious one-liners are set aside when the team realizes they may have been working on a secret weapon for the government. Will the students be able to sabotage the launch of this weapon they have created? Find out in this week's film, Real Genius.
Very good.
That was my movie intro voice.
That was good.
That was a good job.
That's going to be my part-time income here very shortly.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny. Like you say, I was watching it again today. It was kind of a busy week. So as I'm watching it, the intro again, that whole opening scene with like the CIA or whatever, and I'm like, oh, okay. So this weapon they're making, the crossbow project, that is basically our drone planes in a sense today of just the purpose of just picking out somebody from the skies undetected.
Oh, it's science fiction in 1985. I assume, I don't know, but it, you know, today I don't think we have lasers that will do it, but shooting missiles down and stuff, I think we can do that, can't we?
Well, they cost a lot less than what the crossbow would have cost, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, worst case scenario, just put a bomb on it and kamikaze it into something. It's a drone. We'll make more.
So, why don't we go over, I'm going to just talk about some of the, what I thought were maybe some of the main characters, and then we can kind of go into some of the other side characters or supporting characters. But of course, we got Val Kilmer as Chris Knight, the genius, the original, well, not the original genius, but he's like the famous kind of one, the crazy, non-stereotypical, like Mitch, genius guy. And he was, I see there's a note. I think you put that in, Rob. He was 26, Val Kilmer, when he made this movie.
Well, yeah, I actually made some notes here that I just thought was interesting because, like, there's some of the characters. We'll talk about Laszlo here in a minute, but Laszlo is supposed to be this much older, you know, guy from a previous generation. And when they filmed it, he's only 28. Val Kilmer's 26. I know that some of the other students were in their mid-20s. So it just seemed like, you know, I guess you could get away with that a little bit in a college movie because people start looking a little older, you know, when they go to college or whatever. But yeah, I did think that was interesting that he was that old as a college senior. Not, I mean, I was older than that when I was a college senior, but, but this was his first time through, I think.
Did you happen to find out how old the guy that played Mitch was? Gabriel Jarrett?
I didn't see that on there. I could try to look that up, but he looks pretty young in there. He, you know, I've seen him. Well, I looked on his IMDb credits list, and there are a ton of things that he was in, and I don't recognize him in any of them.
15,
so really?
Yeah, his face is kind of, oh, was he 15?
Yeah.
And he was 15 in the movie, too. So, yeah, 10 years or 11 years difference or whatever. But, yeah, his facial structure has changed quite a bit. Well, when you're 15.
Get out of here. He was 15 in this movie? Yeah. For real?
He was born in 1970. The movie came out in 85. So he was either 14
or
15.
Wow, he's probably
15.
Like 14, yeah.
Yep.
Wow. And yeah, I would have placed him at about 20, 21.
Well, dude, he looks completely different now.
We'll have to check it out after.
Looking at pictures of him, doesn't look like the same person.
Right. Well, I'll send you a picture of what I looked like when I was 15.
Also, we had William Atherton, who played the Professor Hathaway. We've seen him. We've covered him, actually, in Die Hard. Basically the same. He seems to play the same character as in Ghostbusters. He's just the very arrogant, you know, he's a prick, exactly. Pretty much. Right?
Yes.
So I think everyone kind of knows who he is, but he plays it well. I would love to see how he is in actual real life. He's probably one of the nicest guys ever, I'd have to imagine. I would hope. And the other one that I thought was probably one of the main characters was Robert Prescott, who played Kent, who I recognize from Bachelor Party. He was the opposite of Tom Hanks. He played a character named Cole in Bachelor Party. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie. Not really something I probably should have seen as a kid, but I think we all can admit we've watched a lot of stuff we shouldn't have watched as a kid. One, because of the rating systems were different, and two, things were just a lot different back then. The way our parents raised, you know, we kind of hover over our kids. You know, Rob, I know we've talked about it. Dor, we've talked about it. Doug, your daughter's fairly young, so you're probably not quite in the hovering in the aspect of what she's watching in movie wise that way. But it definitely was a lot more relaxed for me as a kid. How about you, Dor? Did you see a movie like Bachelor Party when you were a kid?
No, I wasn't supposed to.
But you did.
But I
right?
did, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure my mom would have just been like, they're not killing anybody. Just let them watch it, you know.
Yeah, I don't. It was just one of those HBO movies. I mean, Doug, were you like that? Where you kind of would sneak the HBO and see movies that you probably weren't supposed to be watching, but you did anyways?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I had two benefits. The first is that I had my own TV room, which we called the playroom. And the second is that my parents would go to bed at 8 o'clock.
Wow.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, I was up all night by myself. Cinemax, HBO, Showtime. you name it, you know, I was getting into it. I did see Bachelor Party. I just don't remember a whole lot about that one. I certainly don't remember Kent being in it. But Kent was actually my introduction to the movie. I learned of this movie when my best friend was talking about the scene where they, you know, speak to Kent as a deity and mention his extracurricular activities with Jell-O. So
yeah,
that was my window to this movie, which, you know, got me hooked on.
He was hot and he was hungry.
Exactly. That's the best excuse ever. I was hot and I was hungry.
Yeah. Some of the other characters, like Jordan. Now, I see she was in The Outsiders, Valley Girl, Revenge of the Nerds. I got to be honest, I didn't recognize her from anything else than this movie.
Well, I wrote that stuff down just because it seemed like, it's almost like they were building her up to be an 80s, like a go-to girl. You know, I mean, Outsiders, 83, Valley Girl. I don't really remember her from Valley Girl in 83. But then Revenge of the Nerds in 84, she was one of the nerd girls that came to the party.
Yeah.
Real Genius, 85. And then her last, I mean, her IMDb credits stop at 1988. I mean, I don't know why she just got out of the business.
Huh.
It's too bad because I really like, I thought she was cute in this movie, but not only that, I just like that type of character. You know what I mean? Like the kind of fun, kind of bubbly, you know? And so I would have liked to see her in more movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I'll say I believed her in that part. She, to me, like, was that character.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Doug, again, when we talked last week, you had asked me, did you see the skateboarding connection? I know you guys are talking about skateboarding, and I was like, no, I didn't. And I looked, and I thought I had it. I thought I had the skateboarding connection when they go to the pool party, the tanning party.
Right.
One of the guys, the
tanning invitation.
Yes.
Which I have no clue what that is, but apparently it involves willing beauticians.
Yes. That. And there was and I don't know his character name. There was a Asian guy there, and I thought, okay, was he in Karate Kid 2? So I looked at him like, yep, he was in Karate Kid 2. And I'm like, okay, so was he in Gleaming the Cube? Was he the brother in Gleaming the Cube?
Oh.
And I'm like, there's my escape. No, it wasn't him. So I was stumped. So Doug, why don't you tell us what the skateboarding connection was in this movie?
So you still don't know. Nobody
I do.
Knows.
Oh.
Okay. Rob, do you know who wrote the paper that you sent to me? Because it's right there on the
paper. I wrote it down on this, but I didn't know before I found it on the credits.
Well, yeah.
I did not spot him.
That's when I found it out because I always watch credits because I always look for them to put in like little jokes and stuff during the credits. And as soon as the credits started, I said, what? And I freaked out. I could not believe it.
Yeah. Well, that's how I found out was by reading the credits, but it would have been 87, 88. I knew this back in the time that we were watching this on HBO. And it's the crossbow pilot. He's Stacy Peralta of Pal Peralta Skateboards.
That's great.
That is epic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not know that until today, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. We knew that. We were so hungry for any type of skateboarding material, you know, back in the day when, you know, you didn't have YouTube, you couldn't just, you know, search Rodney Mullen and find all these great things. So we knew every shred of skateboard related paraphernalia that you could find out there. And so we knew that Stacy Peralta was in this movie and you could see and hear him for a grand total of about 5 seconds.
Right, but I'm sure that alone gave the movie more credibility in your eyes.
Absolutely. To our little skater group, yes, that made this movie a part of us. I mean, this was one of our things that Stacy Peralta was in it, so it must be cool. It must be cool.
Well, the other one that I wanted to point out was Laszlo Hollyfield. Laszlo is this somewhat mysterious character at the beginning of the film. We find out that he actually lives in Chris Knight's closet. He kind of comes and goes. Mitch is a little bewildered by this strange person that comes and goes. And Laszlo is played by John, I don't know if it's Greece. Is that how you say that? G-R-I-E-S? Which, in my mind, before I went back and watched this, I thought that this guy was in his 40s or something. I mean, that's the way I remembered it, because they obviously make him look much older or whatever. And that's why I actually wrote down the ages, is because he's 28, which is only a couple of years older than Val Kilmer. In reality, he's supposed to be like 10 years older or whatever. But John is also two people. He's Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite, which I never would have made that connection. And he's also Roger Linus on Lost, which is the same thing. I mean, because with short hair, I would never have put these, you know, I would never have recognized him. And the minute that I saw that, I was like, what? I went right to Google. I pulled up pictures. I'm like, sure enough, it's the same guy, you know, but I never would have got those.
Dude, I just did that in my head right now when I saw that you put Roger Linus, because I didn't see these notes until just right now. And I can see, I knew watching this movie, I knew this guy from somewhere. I could not put my finger on it, because I'm one of those people, I'm always trying to, my wife, and I think I mentioned this before in a previous episode, where my wife kind of gets annoyed with, like, you know who that is? She's like, no. I'm like, oh, this is about, that's blah, blah, blah. And they were this and this and this. She's like, yeah, great. Can I just watch the movie? And I'm sitting here watching this damn movie, man. I knew he looked so familiar, and I'm a huge fan of Lost, and I don't even need to go IMDb. I can just see him right there in my head.
And so this was an 85 film, so figure what, 95, 2005, 25, 28 years ago. In my mind's eye, this guy was like in his 40s, so I was thinking, well, now he would be in his 70s, you know? Right. So I had no idea he was that young when they made this film, which, you know, makes sense that he would just be a normal adult in Lost or Napoleon Dynamite. But yeah, I never would have put those together.
He's also the werewolf vampire in Fright Night 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they keep telling him, you're supposed to bite her on the neck. And then that one time he says, I'm not hungry, man. And they shove roses in his mouth and push him out a window to kill him. Yeah, he's the werewolf vampire.
Yeah.
Did you say they shove roses in his mouth?
Yeah, I'd never heard of that method of killing a vampire. But he keeps trying to hit on the girl, and Charlie had brought her roses, and he's vamping out and turning into, I don't know if he's a werewolf or a vampire. He's something, combination of the two. They put roses in his mouth, and it is like holy water. It burns him.
Sure, yeah.
Well, makes sense.
Speaking of Laszlo, the main character, Mitch, who is the new up-and-coming 15-year-old guy or kid who gets to go to the school in mid-semester too, right? That's one of the big points of this, is that no one's ever done this. He's not the youngest, but he's the only one who's been able to go midterm. Does he, you know, the question is, do you think he's going to turn out to be, after this whole movie is done, like, you know, because we find out, as Rob had said in the summary, that they're basically designing a weapon that they don't, you know, they don't know that this laser is going to be used for. And Laszlo, you know, he found out when he was there, like, the things that he had invented were, I don't remember exactly what it was. I don't know, Doug, if you remember, but it was something that basically was killing people. Do you remember what it was that he...
I can't remember, and this was the first time I'd ever heard that. I never knew why Laszlo was Laszlo, other than, you know, just the pressure of school. I didn't realize it was because he had built some weapon. But yeah, this time I watched it, I know they mentioned that, but I don't know exactly what it was.
Yeah, I don't think they went into any detail.
Yeah, I don't think it was a weapon. Maybe it was. It was something. But yeah, that's why he kind of went off the deep end in a sense. But, you know, and then you have Chris, who is just the kind of a crazy, free-spirited type of guy. Like, what do you think, you know, I'll ask you, Rob, like, what do you think Mitch is going to, how his character would end up being after all of this is said and done?
Well, you know, before he met Mitch, I think he was obviously on the road to becoming more like Laszlo. I mean, he was all serious. He was all work. You know, he didn't want to leave. He didn't want to go to the tanning invitational. He didn't want to go meet the beauticians. So it was all work for him. And when you're 15 and you've just been, you know, put in college in this position, I could totally see that, you know, but, there's that scene where, you know, Mitch, has decided he wants to leave the college.
And, I want to come home, right, Mom.
Right. Yeah. And then, so there's that whole scene where they record his phone conversation. And then Chris talks him into staying and they unpack and he just throws the clothes everywhere. And so you kind of get the feeling that, you know, Mitch will become more like Chris, that he will, you know, he needs to, Chris Knight is a little bit probably too far on the casual side, you know, on the carefree side, but he's also a senior. I mean, he's about ready to graduate, you know, so maybe Mitch will be able to strike that balance between the two.
I don't know. If this was the literal world, I would say Mitch would have to quit school by 17 because he's already has a baby and he has to go get a job.
There's going to be a pregnant beautician somewhere.
Well, no. If you remember, they were not beauticians. They were in the process of becoming
students. Yes,
beauticians in training.
Yeah,
that's right.
Who apparently love nerds, because when those guys walked through the door, a couple buxom ladies in bikinis were jumping up and clapping, and other body parts were jiggling around. So
where were these girls when I was in college?
Exactly. Yeah.
Girls that were attracted to nerds, exactly.
You know, and speaking of that part, when I was watching it, it seemed like you see Chris, he kind of scoops up the one girl and takes her off. And then I swear it was the same girl later in the scene grabs one of the other nerds from the chairs and drags him off into the corner too.
There is some kooky editing in that scene. And I noticed when I was watching it that, I think Mitch had on a blue lei that they put on him, and then the very next scene he's walking and he's holding it in his hand. And I think I read online that some of the different ones, like that people are wearing switch colors or whatever. So that must have been a really long scene, or maybe they filmed it multiple times or something, but there's definitely some wonky editing.
If
in
I had
party.
To guess, Val tried to make that one stretch out a little bit.
Can you blame him?
Well, nope.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Well, that kind of brings us you have, you know, the different stereotypes. You know, you have your jocks, your geeks, and, you know, your I don't know what you guys call them, but like headbangers or whatever, you know, rock guys, and these guys have, you know, these groups of geniuses, they have their own hierarchies that are going on in there. You know, you have Kent, who thinks he's better than everybody and can boss everybody because he kisses up to Jerry, you know, and then you have Chris, who's the cool, doesn't really care, thinks everybody's dumb for studying all time. And then you have Mitch, the new impressionable kid, you know.
Right, and the guy who takes shock therapy to himself for his speech impediment.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, but it was kind of nice to see that in the film, just like you'd have the jocks trying to come down on the geeks. They were just kind of doing it on themselves, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And but they still stuck together in their own little mini cliques. I mean, I thought the character of Kent, Robert Prescott, I think he played that great.
Oh,
I love the character, even though he's such a jerk. I love that character, you know. So I like to ask you guys, you know, I'll start with you, Doug. Like, of all these characters, like, what was your favorite character in this movie?
Chris Knight. I mean, that's kind of a cop out answer since he's the lead, but he's the hook to the film, in my opinion. He's the guy that watching this, what did we say, 85? How old would I have been? I probably didn't see it till 87. I would have been 13, 14. He's the guy that, you know, I wanted to be and thought I would be. This is what I thought college would be like. And I thought I would grow up to be this kind of guy, and actively tried to pattern myself after Chris Knight. So I got to say, you know, he's my favorite, even though I know that's kind of a cop out. We're not digging into the secondary characters that each have their own, you know, characteristics. The character that I probably actually turned out to be more like would have been the guy who during the studying montage jumps up from his and starts screaming and runs out of the room. That's probably who I am in real life, but I wanted to be Chris Knight so badly. So he definitely is my favorite. When I think real genius, I think Chris Knight, he's on the DVD cover, which is appropriate. It really is his movie, and he's my character.
Well, I don't think it's a cop-out at all. I mean, it was a great – they were all great characters. I think everyone – I gotta be honest. I gotta come out right now and just say that when we decided to do this movie, honestly, I was not looking forward to watching this movie again. I really wasn't.
Really?
Because perception. Well, just my and Doug, I know you've talked about, used this term on your podcast, my false memories.
Yes.
Of this movie where I didn't really like it, but I gotta tell you, I really enjoyed this movie. I really did. I'm really glad that we did this movie. So, I think you really could pick any character. I mean, how about you, Rob? What was, you know, are you a Knight fan, a Laszlo? I could see you more of the Laszlo fan.
No, I'm all Chris Knight. I mean, that's who, I was probably more like Mitch. I was the kid that was in all the, advanced classes. I was the one that was like, you know, they would say, oh, well, they'd send me up to other reading groups or whatever. You know, sometimes they didn't exactly know what to do with me. I think, I was probably that person, and maybe I would have been like, Laszlo and eventually snapped, you know, but that Chris Knight figure to me, I mean, I really do like that balance where not only is he obviously, really smart. I mean, he's on the laser team. He makes this little hovering, like gyrocopter type thing that he flies around the campus, you know, so he's obviously, a super intelligent, but, he's good looking. He, you know, knows how to talk to the girls. I will not lie. There are many lines from this movie that I wrote down, you know, as a kid that I would, you know, at least I thought I would try them. No girl, you know, nothing about hammering nails ever came up in the conversation I ever had with women. But, just the way that he was, I thought that was really cool. I mean, that his whole look of the t-shirt with the open shirt over it and the pants that are almost like tucked into the high tops. If I could pull that look off today, I would still be doing that. Absolutely. I did do that for a long time. I had the puffy jeans, you know, with the giant, either white Adidas or giant, you know, white Reeboks or Converse or whatever. I mean, I just thought he was the epitome. He was everything, you know, all into one. So I, like Doug, I feel like, you know, this is a character obviously you're meant to like. So, it's hard to say that you wouldn't want to be like him, but yeah, that was definitely who I wanted to be when I grew up.
Please.
Dude, I'll say you guys had really high, I don't want to say opinions of yourself, but you had really high hopes for yourself.
You know, what's funny about, especially Chris Knight and these scenes, all these scenes that they show in the dorm is that, I don't know if that's what I thought college would be like or what I hoped it would be like or whatever. When I graduated, basically I went to a local community college for 2 years that didn't even have dorms. So I lived at home for a year and then I moved out and got an apartment. So I just drove to school. There was no, you know, smart Asian guys making ice out of, turning the dorms into ice. There was no, we never brought in beauticians, you know, to have parties. So I guess I was more disappointed in college that it wasn't like real genius, you know. I guess I'd hoped as a kid that that's what it would be like, but it didn't turn out that way for me anyway.
That was, that was full on my expectation as well. I fully expected college was going to be like this. And just like you, I started out at community college and it's not even close. You had to be in class or you would fail. You know, you couldn't just come in, stick in a recording.
Right, right.
You know, and that just blew my mind because Real Genius taught me that you didn't have to go to class. I couldn't believe that you had to be in class. So, my expectations of college were totally built on this movie and were totally dashed by real life. I do hope though, Rob, that at some point you went up to some lady and told her not to eat something because it would give her big breasts. I really hope you used that line at least once. Please tell me you did.
I did use it once to Mrs. O'Hara, so that it paid off. Well, I guess no,
it must
really
have worked then.
No, there was something you just said. I don't know about the college. Gosh, I lost it. Go ahead, but I did think all those things. I don't know. Like I said, the I guess I was just more disappointed in real life. You know what I mean? That all those, and you know, on the, we also did the episode on, My Bodyguard, and I was the same way. Like, I thought that's how high school was going to be. Like, there were going to be these guys giving me swirlies, and I was afraid to go to the bathroom in high school, you know, like that, these people. So I don't know. I got a lot of ideas for movies and stuff that didn't, you know, real life wasn't like that, I guess.
Dor, what about you? I mean, we didn't get your input. What was your, one of your, dude, who's your most favorite character in this?
I'll just say I had much lower expectations than those guys. I was so antisocial. The closest person I would have to be is Laszlo. But because I was also so anti-establishment, I wasn't listening to the teachers for a split second. I did go to college for 6 months. And I got tired of telling the teachers off for being incompetent and late to class, even because it was a community college, that I never went back anymore. And if I would have had it like my way, I would have been a isolationist, a hermit, probably just sitting in a hole playing Grand Theft Auto 5 right now.
How
that, you know, what Dora reminded me, what I was going to say is I have a 4-year degree that from when I started to when I stopped spans about 15 years somewhere there, over about 5 or 6 different colleges. And I don't think I ever had a class where they didn't take roll. And so there's that scene, you know, like what Doug mentioned, Dor mentioned as well, where, you know, it starts out where the people are bringing their recorders to class, and then eventually they're dropping off their recorders. They're not even staying. And then in the last scene, poor Mitch is the only person there. The entire student body just has dropped off their recorders, and the teacher has a reel-to-reel recorder going. I never encountered that. I remember getting in trouble for missing like 1 or 2 classes at college. So I never had a class that didn't take roll.
I think you can make the case, though, going back to Dor, that Laszlo, in his own way, is just as cool as any of them. I mean, he lives rent-free in a basement. Yep. With a roller coaster as his door, you know. He figures out a loophole in the Frito-Lay giveaway that enables him, yeah, to get 39.8% or whatever it is of the prizes. And then he ends up with, hot mature blonde at the end and an RV.
Right.
He's almost like Kramer to me. He is damaged in a sense, and he is an isolationist, but he really has figured out how to live life.
And, well, see, and that's the thing I'll say. I was damaged goods big time when I was young. And when I saw him kiss the girl at the end, he literally had a little bit of, I'm not used to this. I'm a little bit uncomfortable kissing her in front of you guys. And that's where I made the connection with him. I was like, oh, yeah, I know exactly what he's feeling there.
Well, I got to just say that as far as me saying Kent, it was, I guess that makes me out to be a real dick. But, I really wasn't going for who we, you know, compared ourselves to. I just thought I thought the character was played quite well.
Oh, it was.
Quite well.
Kent
but
was great.
Since, so really, I'm not a jerk like that, but.
You got to have a good villain to have a good story. So, you know, can't fence the bill. We understand.
Yeah. So, but you know what? That part you were talking about in the lecture hall, I thought that was funny how you see a couple, you know, the students, and not only were you seeing tape recorders, which my mother went to college, after my parents got divorced, she went back to school. She was a stay at home mom, you know, when they were married, when they got divorced, she ended up going to dental school. And I remember her having the big, long black tape recorder that she would take to class. And I remember her sitting in the kitchen, you know, I got to take notes, and she'd be playing this. And I'm just like, wow, who really does that? But you're watching this, and not only do you see that, but every time you start seeing big boom boxes,
yeah,
in the scene and everything.
Well, yeah. And I'll tell you the one thing about Kent that I love, besides the glasses and the braces and just the overall look of the character being, to me, authentic, what I would picture him as. But near the end, when he was standing out front of the house, and he was just totally unlike Kent, and you could see he was wearing a dickie, and I just thought that was like the coup de grace of that character. That expressed him to a T.
To be wearing a dickie?
To be wearing a dickie.
Yeah, I remember seeing, was it Randy Quaid in Christmas Vacation where he clearly had a dickie on. And just being a kid, I saw that with my father in the theater. And just to this day when I see that scene, I just died. You know, it's just, you could totally see the outlines of it. And it was hilarious. But, you know, the character of Ken, it's funny because, you know, he thinks because he kisses up to Jerry, which Jerry's really, he's just Jerry's go-to guy.
And his he keeps calling him Jerry too.
Yeah, you know, and he, so he kind of feels like he has one over everybody. And he, you know, he just really doesn't. I mean, he's just passed aside by Jerry just to do his laundry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to pick it up and to buff a mirror, I believe was his other task.
Yeah. And Jerry, Dr. Hathaway, you know, he's got this pressure from like this, like CIA agent that, or whatever, this little group of guys, pressuring him to get this design of this laser done. And they give, I mean, I think they say at the beginning it was like an 18-month timeline, and they crunch it down to like what, four weeks or something like that.
Right. So let me ask you this, and I never thought about this as a kid, but as I was watching this as an adult, now at the earlier in the film, what we see is that basically they've been giving him money, Dr. Hathaway, which is how he's been fixing up his house. And then
embezzlement is a felony.
Right. Yeah. They allude to the fact that if he doesn't deliver this laser, that, you know, they're going to expose this, you know, little scheme that they have going on. So. Late, you know, towards the end of the film, Mitch and Chris have finished the laser. They have it working. They figure out that it's going to be used as a weapon. Laszlo, you know, basically, you know, figures this out. They run back, and the laser and the large mirror, which is part of the, I guess, the aiming targeting system, are both gone. So, what in real life? What do you think happened the following week? I mean, let's say that he didn't get caught, you know, that he wasn't exposed. I mean, basically, all these students are going to come back and say, hey, someone stole the laser. Someone stole this thing, you know, and I don't know. It just seemed to me this would be a difficult scheme to pull off, you know, and you still have all this money. I mean, eventually, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a very well thought out scheme.
Well, yeah, on Hathaway's part, at least. I mean, as far as the other end that wants the weapon, I mean, they're pretty much, you know, out of sight, out of mind. There's no trace to them.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Hathaway's not really thinking clearly through this. And that's the whole thing, too, that we have to point out is that he obviously is in cahoots with these guys. He knows he's pulling the wool over the students' eyes, using the students to figure out this weapon. So even though they don't know what's going on, and Kent as well, Kent's the one, I believe, who designed the mirror, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. It just seems to me that even if the plan didn't backfire towards the end of the film, that it still would have been difficult to pull off in the long run, at least for Hathaway.
Well, I would say it looked, the only people we saw who physically saw that were the five students. And all he would have said to them was, shut up, you passed. And college kids might have been like, oh, yeah, we passed.
Well, I don't know if their characters would have. They were clearly disturbed by the realization of what they had inadvertently created.
Well, at least two of them. Because Kent, the other guy who said like one line, and the guy who gave himself shock treatment, I don't think cared.
Well, and even now that the weapon has been exposed, there's got to be some fallout. I mean, first of all, if nothing else, you got to think the 10 o'clock news is going to have footage of somebody's house that is filled with popcorn.
Yeah.
That has done that, you know. So you got to think there's some fallout of Hathaway's actions at the end of this film.
I think Hathaway probably got liquidated.
Yeah.
As they said in the
beginning.
Oh,
that's possible. Yeah. That's true. They seem to be really pretty quick to do. I mean, the one guy that said he didn't want to be part of it, and they said, no problem.
Yeah. And that's what that's the part of Hathaway that I kind of respected as a character. You know, he is getting all this leaned on pressure from this guy, from the CIA. And he's just like, dude, back off. You can't just tell, you know, this isn't something that can just happen overnight. And he wasn't intimidated that much. I don't think until the end when he realized the pressure that was really going on.
You know, this is something that never crossed my mind, guys, in the 80s. Mitch kissed Jordan, you know. Mitch saved the world and kissed Jordan. That's what I saw.
Right. Yeah. As a kid, I'm the same way. I thought, hey, yeah, I guess they all graduate. Woohoo! You know.
Yeah. Yeah. You're more correct to the real world. You look at these things today, and you're like, oh wow, the fallout from this, even if they succeeded, would have been horrendous. But as a kid, I was Mitch kissed Jordan. Awesome.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. No, they break right into everybody wants to rule the world. Fade to black. You know, you got the end credits, and everybody walks away happy.
Yeah. Happy.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right, Doug, and that's kind of why I think I liked it more now. I think watching it as a kid on HBO, I was probably, you know, it probably came out on HBO maybe 86 or something. As I was 12 years old, I really didn't, you know, the whole beginning of this movie before you even meet Kent and everybody at the college, I don't even remember that happening as a kid. I don't remember Project Crossbow. I don't remember that being the driving force behind the whole movie at all. I just remember a bunch of crazy lasers going off and girls with big jugs, and I'm 12 years old going, wow, that's really cool.
You know, one complaint, you mentioned the girls, one complaint that I had about this movie is that there were two or three attractive blonde women who were in lead roles, and I mean, I know that there was one that was significantly younger, there was the guy's daughter or whatever, and then there was the older one, and I think there was a third one. I had trouble telling them apart. I mean, and trust me, I'm a fan of the ladies from the 80s. I love the big hair. I love the bleach. You know, you put a girl in knee-high black boots and a jean jacket, you know, that's totally my style. But I don't know. I wish they had done more to try to
differentiate,
and not that. Yeah, they didn't have a lot of character development or whatever. But you know, give one red hair or give one, you know, something where I could tell them apart.
Yes, because here's my question: I didn't quite get the girl that Laszlo ended up with at the end of the movie. Was that the girl in the very beginning where Chris went on the interview?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, is that the same girl who was in Mitch's room wanting to get him?
Yes. I don't think, is it? I didn't think so, but she looks very familiar.
She is going around collecting the 10 biggest brains in the world is this a clean podcast?
Trophies.
Yeah, exactly. Let's just put it that way. She is conquering, adding to her collection the biggest brains in the world. I don't know if she got Chris, but she was going after Mitch and she didn't get him either. She must have got that guy in the beginning during that interview that she said had died. And then Laszlo was number one, and that's who she sticks with. But she's trying to go 10 for 10, just like Iron Man, you know, at the beginning of Iron Man 1. She's trying to go 10 for 10, and that's her thread.
And I'll say this. I don't think Laszlo, after this movie, in real life, would end well, because him and her go up to a cabin in the woods, aka Unabomber style, and he has all this free stuff. And what happens when that free stuff runs out? You know, I'm sure he's perfectly content with living off of minimal stuff because he's done it for 30 years.
But right, she's not.
I don't know about her.
Yeah.
Yeah. A new Einstein's going to be born or something, and then she's, you know, on the road again.
Yeah.
Right, right.
I'd have to look at it as I think Chris got her.
Oh, you don't think she found Chris, right?
No, I think Chris pulled her aside in one of the offices. I mean, he just had that kind of pull with the ladies, you could tell.
It was mutual conflict.
Yeah, there was no you know, it was pretty simple, I think, with those two. But
you know what they say, a girl's got to have her standards.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to the other blonde, though, that Rob mentioned, the general's daughter. Did you guys know who that was?
She was familiar, but no.
This isn't live, but yeah, go ahead, because I know I could place her. I want to place her to something. Tell us.
That's Deborah Foreman from Valley Girl, April Fool's Day, My Chauffeur.
April Fool's Day.
I think every guy is going to remember the first scene of April Fool's Day. So, you know, if you see it, you will instantly be in love with Deborah Foreman for reasons we won't mention here. But, wow. I mean, they don't use her much. She's only in two scenes, but you talk about the ladies of the 80s, man, I didn't notice her that much back then. But going back to those movies and watching them today, she shoots to the top of the list, man. And she was right there.
So, Doug, are you like Rob? You're still a fan of the ladies of the 80s?
Oh, absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Absolutely. I, Megan Fox, keep her, please. Don't want her around me. You know, Blair from Facts of Life. Yes, absolutely.
You take the good, you take the bad.
Absolutely. Blair or Joe, take either.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I think I'm more of a Joe guy.
Yeah, no, Joe's too tough for me.
Yeah.
Maybe Tootie.
I bet you there's a Mrs. Garrett website out there.
Oh, I bet you there is.
Yeah, I mean, these days, yeah. I think you pretty much find anything you want out right there. I don't know if I am or not, man. To be quite honest, I hear what you're saying about like the Megan Fox, you know, pretty girl, but like nowadays, it's like, it's almost like how thin can you get them, you know?
Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't either. Yeah. No, well, I don't.
They look kind of hard too to me with the shaped eyebrows and the angular face and they all look interchangeable. I mean, somebody recommended Arrow to me, so I watched the first episode a couple nights ago. All beautiful people. To me, they're all cookie cutter. I mean, you could put anybody in that role, in that position, and the show would be the same.
Is that a CW show?
I believe it is. Yeah.
Whenever I see anything like that, I'm like, oh, it's like a CW show, whether it is or not, where it's like everybody is gorgeously beautiful. It's like, oh, it's a CW type show.
Absolutely. And they are gorgeous and beautiful, but they're the same, you know? Whereas I think you look back at the 80s, you look at Amy Steele from Fright Night 2. Beautiful, sweet, not perfect, but beautiful
normal.
And sweet. Yeah, normal girl next door.
Girl next door.
Yeah, and to me, so much better than Megan Fox draped over a motorcycle on Transformers 2. I concur.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. It's the big poofy hair. I don't miss that. I mean, that trend. I don't want that to come back.
I could tone down a bit.
And I mean, I dated my fair share of poofy hairs, but those are memories. I mean, I don't want to see that trend. I mean, because you know how it is, everything, and that's how it is now. The 80s are, you know, they're popular in two different ways. They're popular with people like us who grew up in them and have a nostalgia for them, the things, you know, remembering all that stuff. And then you have like the college kids now who, you know, will throw on every single piece of fluorescent clothing they can to be like, oh, I'm 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's certain things, the poofy hair, I don't want to see that. I definitely want to see that come back.
Well, here was one question I wanted to ask you guys about the movie. Overall, I thought the music was fantastic in the movie.
Yes.
I mean, it just all fit. But what in the hell was going on with that intro music?
Oh, it was bad. It was bad.
No.
Here's the thing. There's so many classic 80s movies. I don't think you've done it yet. We should do, I'm sure we will at some point, do Weird Science. Weird Science has a great, I mean, that Oingo Boingo song, you know, and it sets the mood for that whole movie. Yep. The opening for this movie, that Real Genius song, I did not like it. The only thing that I did like about some of the music is, especially if you're a retro type person, like I'm a retro person. I still listen to 80s music. I had the 80s Sirius channel that I listened to. I listened to 80s music on Pandora, but you can only do it for so long. You're going to hear the same three Cyndi Lauper songs over and over. You're going to hear the same couple of Twisted Sister songs. You know, they're not going deep into those discographies to pull 80s songs out. You tend to hear those hits over and over. So what I did like about this movie is there were 80s songs in here that I didn't remember, you know.
Yep.
Now, that being said, I think maybe I don't remember them because they weren't that great.
But they all fit to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're all a little bit upbeat, a little bit, you know, they for the most part fit the mood. But that intro, the music to me was horrible. But if you listen to the words, I see why they picked that song, because some of the words were prevalent to the movie.
Yeah. And there was a couple of montages in this, but I don't even remember what songs they were. I don't think there were songs I recognized. I don't think.
I think I'm falling. I think that was in the first montage.
Was that one of them?
And I didn't recognize those either, but my wife did. She started singing them, and I don't know if she knew them, you know, from this movie, because she's as big a fan as me, or if she knew them from outside the movie. But yeah, I didn't recognize any of them.
During the suntan invitational, I believe it was All She Wants to Do Is Dance.
Yeah, there were two songs I recognized. That was one, and then the
One Night Love Affair. Wasn't
it? One Night Love Affair.
Brian Adams,
which is, I mean, you want to talk, you know, as Rob said, you're not going deep into the discography. That is kind of deeper with Brian Adams, and it's a great song, and it does fit the mood perfectly. I could do without All She Wants to Do Is Dance. I've always hated that song, but.
I didn't say I liked it.
I understand. But One Night Love Affair, oh, man, it just.
And the theme of those two songs, too, the One Night Love Affair and, you know, All She Wants to Do Is Dance and Make Romance. And you have this party with the, you know, so I could see why they picked those. And then you have that, that Tears, is it Tears for Fears?
Yes.
Yeah. At the end of the movie, Everybody
Perfect
Wants
song.
To Rule the World.
Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was really fitting.
Yeah. I got to say, I mean, the soundtrack overall, one, I have to disagree with Dore.
Huh?
But
what? How? It was good
with the intro a song from Carmen McRae, which kind of sounds not so much Billie Holiday, but like an Ella Fitzgerald type of sound to it, which I'm kind of biased because I do OTR Playlist, which is an old time radio podcast, so I love old time music like that. So as far as fitting in the movie, aside from lyrics, I can see where you're like, why, how is this fitting in? And I don't even remember it because, like I said, I don't remember the intro to the movie, but I love that. I just love old music like
that's
that.
That's not what I was listening to in 85.
No. Yeah. Well, I kind of was everything, you know, along with older music. My grandmother used to always say, you were born in the wrong time, Sean. I've always liked old stuff. But as far as the soundtrack itself, aside from, you know, the Don Henley, the Brian Adams, the Tears for Fears, which I love Tears for Fears, you're right. It they're songs that we probably, most of us wouldn't recognize. I know you said, Doug, that Heather had recognized them. Most of us wouldn't, but you would say, at least I would, this is an 80s soundtrack. This is an 80s movie soundtrack. Yeah. You know, you listen to that, whether you know those songs or not, that's totally 80s. Mm-hmm. And that's what I loved about it. And even I'm Falling, never heard the song other than this movie, but it's just, that's an 80s sound.
So we talked about the 80s music. We talked about the 80s hairstyle, which I think we had a 50-50 split. I think Doug and I were still for the big bangs while Sean and Dore were not. But I want to talk about the clothes. And I talked a little bit about what Chris Knight wore in this movie, but I could not get enough of what the people were wearing in this movie. I wish I still had, well, not that it would fit. Let's not be silly, but I wish that look was still in style. And so I wanted to ask you guys, and I'll start off, but I wanted to ask what you guys were wearing in 1985. Now, I will tell you, I have this picture, and I think I've referred to this picture before because it's so awesome. And it really sums up everything that was going on in my life in 1985. And it's a picture of me. I'm sitting in front of my Commodore 64. On the wall behind me, there is a 8.5 by 11 picture of Rambo. there's all these awesome, you know, truly awesome 80s things in this picture. There's, I think, a Star Wars ship maybe in the corner. I have some Dungeons and Dragons things on my computer monitor. In this picture, first of all, this is 85 would be the year after Footloose. So I have a spike haircut, except for my mom, up until I was old enough to start paying for my own, my mom would always cut my hair. So it doesn't look anything like Kevin Bacon's spike. It really just looks like a giant mop kind of thing on my head. And I'm wearing those pants we talked about. They were like they were denim, like jeans, but they were like tucked in at the bottom, you know, and I have these giant puffy, I mean, the puffier, the better, right? White high tops. And then on top of the whole thing, I have a gray Don Johnson jacket.
Nice.
From Miami Vice. So that is me in 1985.
With
the sleeves
rolled up, right? The sleeves of the jacket.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Two cuffs. You didn't want to go three. That wouldn't be cool. You only roll it up two cuffs worth. But so I want to find out what you guys were wearing around this time, 1985.
Well, I think as far as like jeans went, we did do the cuffs. And now I don't know, things got weird here in Buffalo. Did you guys like fold your pants and then cuff them? You know what I mean? Like kind of make them a little tighter?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So it wasn't just the Buffalo thing, because they got in some weird thing about pinning. They used to put pins in their pants here and stuff, and then they would cuff them. It was really weird. But so we were doing that, but we were also, I think this is about the time where, do you guys remember in the summertime, jams?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Shorts? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Jams were huge.
Yeah. And my parents couldn't afford them.
Ditto.
I had the Kmart, like, hams, I guess you may call them or something.
No, they were,
you know.
I can one up you. My mom also knew how to sew, so she would go down to Hancock Fabrics and get like the ugliest Hawaiian curtains and turn them into jams. So I would have these, you know, she'd put in the elastic waistband for me, and I would, so everybody else would have OP jams or, you know, something like that, and I would have, mine weren't even, what were yours, hams? Mine were like ghetto yams or something.
Rob definitely wins that round.
Yeah, I wore hams, you wore yams. But yeah, because that's about the time when I went to Disney World, the first and only time I went. My mother took me and my brother down there, and my brother brought his girlfriend. So it was pretty much like me and my mom hanging out. And there's a picture of me standing there with Chip and Dale, and there I am with my hams on, my mother could only afford to buy me one OP, Ocean Pacific shirt, mm-hmm. at the time. And it was a long sleeve white shirt. So here I am in Orlando, Florida in August wearing this long sleeve thing. I mean, I think you could almost see it like in my smile. Like I'm like, God, it's hot. You know, I'm wearing it, but that's the only like cool, you know, quote shirt I had. So that's pretty much how I was sporting things. How about you, Doug?
Pretty much the same. We would do the jams. We would do Bugle Boy was our brand of choice. And you would, I think we called it pin the cuffs. We didn't use pins, but we would fold them and then roll them up. Your Chuck Taylor Converse, of course. And they came out with some, I don't know if they were ever neon, but there were some colors to them, you know, so you'd have some colors.
Oh, sure. You got that light blue. There was a yellow one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yellow, yeah.
And
then they had the ones where you folded them down. Remember those where it had the different color on the inside?
Oh, yeah. They had like a cuff to them. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Those were
extra high.
That's good times.
Yeah, they were extra high. They're like super high tops, but you would fold them down.
I think those
were
neon. And I did wear, you know, a t-shirt, and you would have something like Ocean Pacific or something to do with skateboarding, something to do with surfboarding or Hawaii or something like that. And I would have a long sleeve shirt with the arms rolled up. And I never thought about it till, you know, Rob just said something, but that quite likely was inspired by Chris Knight, because as far as I know, I wasn't copying anybody else. I thought I invented that. In fact, one day my friends, as a joke, said, we're going to come to school dressed like Doug. And that's what they wore. And they liked it and kept doing it, you know. But so I thought I invented that. But apparently I was actually influenced by Chris Knight. So that was me.
What about you, Dor? Were you wearing
hams? I got a prediction of Dor here. Oh, I'm going to say Dor didn't put up with any of that crap.
Well, I'll say, my dad was a Baltimore City police officer, a.k.a. didn't get paid a lot of money. My mother worked as a state employee, a.k.a. not a lot of money. I remember I had Asus high tops for a great many years, and just whatever shorts I could get a hold of, because I wore shorts virtually all year. I didn't care. And the t-shirts were always like three-year-old styles. Like, I do remember we got one OP shirt between me and my brother, and we would constantly fight over who would get to wear it.
You'd roll the 20-sided die to see who would get to wear it?
No, we just ripped it out of each other's hands and tried to knock out each other's teeth for it.
I got to tell you, I have this memory, and I want to say it was the day before either 8th grade or 9th grade, and my mom would take us school shopping during the summer, you know, and she would get like these like five pairs of Levi's. That was our thing, and she'd put them on layaway, so you would go like like right before school and pay them off, and you'd have your five new pairs of jeans, one for every day. But we wouldn't go shopping for shirts until like the week before, right before school started, first of all because we would always wear them and get them torn up before school started, you know. And so I remember we went one time, and we had a local clothing store called Anthony's, and we went there, and they had these OPs that were like, button-up shirts, like, you know, almost like a, I mean, like a short-sleeve dress shirt. And there was this one on the back. It had a guy doing like a front side air in bright pink on the back. And I think it said OP in orange. And then the white, the shirt was white, you know. And I just, I had my heart set on this shirt. My mom was like, you will never wear this. It is a white and orange and pink shirt. And I was almost in tears just because I wanted to have something that was name brand to go back to school on that first day. So I got like four generic shirts and my mom did buy me this shirt. And I'm pretty sure like the first or second time I wore it, people made fun of it. And then my mom would just make me continually wear it. I think they said it was for girls or something, you know, but I didn't care just because it said OP on it and it had that skater on there. And you just, that first day of school, you wanted to have something, you know, that was like, hey, you know, you're ready.
I had a shirt that looked like a Jackson Pollock painting. Like somebody had just splashed drops of paint. I thought that was so cool. Did you guys ever do the suspenders, but like you didn't wear them? You just, they hung down.
You let them hang down? Yeah, of course. Yeah. Then Steve Caballero.
Yeah, exactly. And I also used to have a pair of Walkman headphones that I would wear around my neck, and we weren't allowed to have a Walkman or radio in school. But these weren't connected to anything. So I would be challenged on it all the time. The teachers would say something and I'd pull out the cord and say, it's not connected. I'm just wearing the headphones as a
style statement.
Yeah, a fashion statement, you know.
Because nothing says style like silver and orange sponge headphone covers.
Well, we had a lot of people that wore overalls, but I'm from Oklahoma, so it wasn't really a fashion statement. They were just guys that wore overalls. I do remember I went to a pep assembly one time, and my friend had brought his Walkman. And you remember you could pop the little earpieces off?
Yep. Yes.
You know, and so he and I were sitting close to each other, and we had split. You know, so we each had one speaker, and we were, you know, with our arms leaned up against the pole, like cupping one speaker each, so we could listen to, I think, like Kiss's Greatest Hits or something around that time. So yeah, but it was definitely, you had to sneak that stuff into school for sure. One of the things I wrote down, I wanted to mention this. I don't really, I'm not good at converting like 80s dollars to modern day dollars or whatever. And I could not find what the budget was of this film. And we can make an educated guess. I mean, there's not a lot of huge special effects. We have the ship at the end, the jet floating around. We have the laser. So there are some special effects. Some of them weren't quite so special.
But that jet was stock footage, I'm sure.
You think so?
Yeah.
But the, this movie grossed $13 million, which I thought was way lower than what I thought it would be.
I don't know.
I would have thought. Yeah, I would have thought that was high.
Back then, I would think that was pretty high. Because I would have assumed this thing would probably cost less than $1 million to make because there wasn't much in it. Well, there wasn't much in it. I mean, it was mostly in the dorm or in the lab. The laser for the tanning invitational was probably expensive to get done. But, I mean, not much more.
I don't know. I always see like, oh, this movie cost $100 million or whatever. And I'm like, well, I don't know where the money went, you know? So I'm not a good judge of budgets and stuff like that. But I don't know. I thought, and Doug, I know you've done some comparisons like on the Retroist. So I hate to put you on the spot, but I'm trying to think of other movies. I mean, this is the summer of 85. So isn't this like Back to the Future? I'm trying to think what other big 85 films would have been around this time. So maybe there was a lot of competition or something, but I don't know. I just thought it would have done a lot more than $13 million. Yeah,
84, 85, 86. I mean, look at what you have those years. And I can't peg it exactly, but yeah, in the Retroist, I've done this so many times. I mean, this is Back to the Future, Karate Kid, Gremlins, Goonies, Temple of Doom. All of that is in this neighborhood. So yeah, probably took away, you know, from it. But, you know, again, with HBO, and to me, this was, I remember HBO when they were showing Star Wars, like early 80s, but I really think there was just a premium channel explosion in the mid 80s where, you know, it wasn't such a, you know, a rare thing anymore for someone to have HBO, you know, cause I remember, you know, going up to, you know, students in class be like, do you guys have HBO? And I mean, the guy that did, it was a special thing. I think by this time, and again, it was out in 85, it probably would have been 86, 87. By the time that it was showing, you know, regularly on HBO or whatever premium channel it was, all of my friends saw it. We all talked about it. We all loved it. So I don't know any specifics, but maybe this is one of those, you know, cult movies or whatever that just became popular, wasn't popular in the theater because there was so much competition, but became popular on TV and video.
Yeah, I think HBO definitely helped out a lot of movies that probably would have been forgotten or just, you know, overwhelmed by movies like Back to the Future and Gremlins and stuff like that. I mean, HBO had a big, you know, factor in movies that I saw as a kid. We, you know, we went to some movies, the big ones, Back to the Future and, you know, Indiana Jones, stuff like that. But a lot of these movies that we have covered in Throwback Reviews and that we will cover are movies that I saw either in its entirety or entirely in pieces.
Okay, well,
from HBO.
Super quick, Sean. It cost $350,000 to make Real Genius. In the first weekend, it made $2.5 million, it said.
Wow.
So I would think they would consider that a success.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Wow. I can't believe it cost that little.
Same here. And it does say it's a shoestring budget, which I guess would explain the editing technique in the party scene.
Right. Now I don't think that there was any type of Real Genius merchandise or anything like that, but I did find a really cool website when I was looking for Real Genius merchandise, and it is founditemclothing.com, and we can put that maybe in the show notes or something, Sean. What Found Item Clothing does is they make reproductions of t-shirts that appear in movies. So all these shirts that Chris Knight wears, he has the one that says I Heart Toxic Waste. Yeah. He has the one that has the gorilla in the middle. It's like international something or gorillas or whatever. They make all those shirts and they sell them. So they're new shirts with those type of designs and stuff on them. So I have to see what sizes they come in. But this is putting me closer to my dream of dressing like Chris Knight. I didn't do it in 85, but 2000. By 2015, I'm bringing it back.
Well, you got to get your monkeys t-shirt then.
That's right. Yes, yes.
Hey, I looked up the top movies of 85. And again, I mean, here's a little bit of what was competing. I don't know exactly when these movies were in the theater, but you got, as we said, Back to the Future, Rambo, Rocky IV, Cocoon, Goonies, Spies Like Us, Police Academy 2, View to a Kill, European Vacation, Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire, Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, Teen Wolf. So it was a good year. Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Real Genius came in 66th, according to this. But so that's pretty low, I guess. But I mean, look at what it was up against.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely up against some good movies, which, again, like I said, I think kind of brings us with the HBO and Cinemax and stuff like that to bring out some good movies.
Well, and you know, because during that time, too, about you're saying about being on HBO and stuff, like I remember watching this movie over and over and over, and it was because I had taped it off of HBO. So I had one VHS tape that had Real Genius, Weird Science, and I think for some reason, Howard the Duck. I don't know. It doesn't really fit in those other two movies, but I remember watching those movies just, you know, continually. So that's, I mean, nowadays I would have bought them on DVD or Blu-ray or something like that. But yeah, back then, you know, I'm sure I did not see this in theaters. I don't know about you guys. I think I was 14 or 15 when it hit theaters. So I didn't see it in theaters. I'm sure the first time I saw it was on HBO and then I taped it. So that $13 million they made, basically there's none of that for me.
No, I didn't see this in the theater. Like I said, this was an HBO special for me, I guess you'd say.
Same here.
Yep. Now I wanted to ask you guys real quick. Did any of you guys watch the trailer for this film this week?
Nope.
No.
Yeah.
Did you watch it, Sean? On the trailer, as they go through and they're introducing the characters, there's a scene in which Chris Knight is floating outside of the classroom in a lawn chair with balloons. And Professor Hathaway comes to the window. All the students come out and they say, "What are you doing?" And he says, "I'm flying," or something like that, you know, a smart alecky type thing. It's been so long since I would have seen the trailer. I didn't remember that at all, but I'm guessing that's a scene that I mean, it obviously didn't make it into the movie. It must have got cut. So it's one of those
special features.
Well, I always enjoy seeing those things. And unfortunately, I do own this on DVD, and there are absolutely no special features on the DVD.
Yeah.
And maybe there's been a re-release. I'm not sure. But I have a pretty early DVD. And the special features that are listed are trailer, and one side of it has widescreen, and the other side is full screen. Those are the special features listed on the DVD I have. But yeah, so I always like seeing little scenes like that. If you go, the trailer is available out there on YouTube, and if you watch it, you can see this little scene where, like I said, he's floating in a lawn chair with balloons, which seems like something they would do. That these are the type of guys that would do that.
Yeah, it looks to me like they did cut a lot, because if you look in some of those montage scenes, you can see that they're talking back and forth. There's some dialogue that we're not hearing. And I had heard that when you see that in a montage, it's just a scene that, you know, didn't work, and they cut it, and then they try to reclaim a little bit of it for a montage. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it looks like there were some things, you know, that were cut. But there was one, it was kind of long, it was kind of extensive in the montage scene where Chris and Mitch are talking back and forth, and you see their lips move, but, in, you know, you don't hear them talking. You hear, "I'm falling" instead.
Well, starting to wrap this one up, the last thing I guess that we should probably touch on, there was a lot of quotes in this movie. Rob, you had already told us one that you that you've used on Miss O'Hara. But what are some of your guys' favorite quotes? Dor, you got any favorite quotes from this movie?
Well, I will say Rob put a couple down the dock, which I think are all great. But the one he didn't have in there, which I loved, was Professor Hathaway, I believe, in his house talking to Chris and saying, I want to see more of you around the lab. And Chris just instantaneously saying, fine, I'll gain weight. And and I just like that line, because that to me was like Chris's character and attitude to a T.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly. How about you, Doug? Any quotes that stand out for you?
We'll hammer later. I use that quite often in real life when, you know, something is postponed and people are disappointed about it. That's my response. I say, well, we'll hammer later.
And they have no idea what you're referencing.
They have no clue what that means, but I'm laughing hysterically.
Yeah, you're laughing inside as you're going, okay, Doug, all right, we'll hammer it out later. Oh, man. And how about you, Rob?
Well, I wrote down several, and I could have written down 100, because this movie is so well crafted with little one-liners and stuff. And in fact, I think some of them go by so quick that I probably missed them on the first viewing. There's the one where Chris is, when he's trying to talk Mitch into staying, he says the first thing we need to do is get even with Kent, and it's a moral imperative. I say that all the time. And my buddy Jeff and I mean, this was our movie. We watch this a lot. So, I mean, I could just hear me saying that to him, or him saying that to us, we need to do this later. And then one of us will say, it's a moral imperative, you know. So that's something that we added to our long-term vernacular, got added in. Anytime I hear somebody talk about Socrates, I think of, the quote where he says, he's like, I drank what? Which I don't even know if I got that at the time of this movie, but now, it's funny. And I used the line before. I probably got hit for using it, but when Chris Knight is talking to the general's daughter in Professor Hathaway's house, and he tells her if there's anything he can do for her, or more to the point, to you, to let him know. And I'm sure that has come out of my mouth at some point. But and there's one other one too. I mentioned that I wrote down here. When they ask Laszlo, you alluded to this earlier, Sean, that he is. Has figured out this loophole in the Frito-Lay contest. So he is down slaving away, printing out entries for this Frito-Lay contest. And he's figured, in the amount of time, he can print out enough entries where he will win, 30% of the prizes or whatever. And they ask him what he's doing. And he has this completely serious look on his face. And he says, well, they said enter as many times as I like. And so I did. And I can tell you that I have adapted that when it comes to collecting. And I've said that line many times to my wife. I'll come home with a stack of Star Wars toys or something, and she'll say, what have you bought now? And I will tell her that it said collect them all. And so I did. And I use that line all the time. So yeah, there's so many great little, I mean, the writing in this movie, the dialogue in this, I thought was, I mean, not all the dialogue necessarily, but definitely, the line, Chris Knight's lines and, some of Laszlo and, you know, some of the interaction I thought between Hathaway and Chris Knight for sure is a top notch.
Hey, Rob.
Yes, sir.
Do you want to borrow my pajamas?
Yeah, that was an odd
that
line.
That was a very odd line.
I'm like, wow, that was definitely odd placement. But
do you have a bed? Because I'll make you one.
Yeah,
if you
don't. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah, you know,
I was going to make you one, but you have one.
Yeah. Or are you finished? Or did you go? Or something like that when she's in the bathroom.
Oh yeah, she runs in,
and he's totally.
Is it because I'm here?
Yeah, that was a funny scene because I'm that guy, man. I'm that guy. If I'm at that urinal and someone comes next to me, just it's done. I'm done. I'm shut off. Well, and I can feel for him.
Right. She's a completely logical character. Yeah. You know, she's just like, I have something to tell you. So she follows him, goes into the bathroom, and starts talking, and doesn't ever, you know, phase her that this would be weird and out of the ordinary or whatever.
Yeah.
Like when she's buffing the floor of her dorm room.
Oh, no. She was stripping it, I believe.
Stripping it, yeah.
She was like totally going to reface
it. Yes.
It's like, wow.
Did you get that part where she talked about how she drove her roommate insane? And they had to put her in an insane asylum? Yeah. I don't think I ever caught that as a kid. But,
I know I didn't.
Yes.
No, you're right. That was a great point. That was a great part. I'm just thinking, yeah, I can see that definitely happening. She never sleeps. She says she never sleeps. I'm always up. Yeah. If you ever need it, you want to talk, come in. I never sleep. I'm just like, wow, man, this chick is, she's something else, Mitch.
And I love how she comes into the tanning invitational. Yes. All the other girls are there to tan, and she's there to test her rebreather.
Well, she's not a lesbian. So.
Right, exactly.
That's why she's not necking. You know what? Yeah, yes. I watched it this movie almost twice fully this week, and the first time I was kind of like, "Oh man, her character." I was kind of like, "Did we really need her character?" But she definitely was a good addition. Mm-hmm. You know, the second time, I guess I appreciated her character a little more in my second viewing of this movie. So
yeah, I'll say the initial introduction to her was a letdown because all she had was a lawn chair and bringing it down a hill of like snow, ice, whatever. And she was overly complexing it. And it's like, no, if she was really a real genius, she would have had that mastered the first time. She would have been talking about something else that really was perplexing and complex, not just a lawn chair going down ice.
Yeah.
Well, I think you need her. Without her, it becomes almost a fraternity. I mean, it's all guys at that point. So I think you need her to kind of even out, you know, to make it, I don't know, I guess just to even out the cast. And she does eventually play that love interest for Mitch, which kind of feels like a little tacked on side thing, but I think you have to have that. It's not really an 80s movie unless you have a little side love story. So.
Yeah, but it wasn't that bad, though. It really wasn't too much in your face, though.
I just took her as a pervert because she was like 18 and he's 15.
Yeah, I wrote that down, too. I think she says she's 19. Yeah. At one point, he's 15, so
well, her,
I think that's against the law.
Well, her. What about the lady who says, I've been waiting 3 years to do this? She's been waiting for Mitch to turn 15. I was like, wow.
I didn't even put that together. Yeah, but yeah, like, yeah.
I didn't either, but I've been waiting since you were 12.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
And has she been chasing? Well, if she's been chasing, I don't know. How old do you think she is? Because I got the impression she was like,
she was in her 40s, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, 30s or 40s or something, so.
Yeah, yeah. That was definitely funny. I thought that, I'm like, wow. But anyways, you know, like I said in the beginning, I wasn't looking forward to this movie. Not that I wasn't looking forward. I was looking forward to doing this with, you know, having Doug come on. But some movies I really am anxious to rewatch, and this one, it just wasn't one of them. But man, am I glad I did. I really am. So I just want to ask you guys, and you know, I'll start off with you, Doug. You know, I think we know your answer, but did you enjoy this movie for, I don't know how many times you've seen it, but.
Oh, absolutely. It's still fun, still funny, still inspiring. I was kind of like Dor, the opening, I didn't remember and kind of had a problem with it. And then the whole crossbow scene, I was like, what? I don't remember any of this other than Stacy Peralta, you know. But once it got going, I was absolutely in love with it again. this is what I thought life would be like when I was a kid. It's still what I think life should be like today. So it's still up there in my book. I still love it.
Very good. And how about you, Dor?
Definitely high. Definitely very high. Partially because, honestly, I'm still a Val Kilmer guy. I still really like him. I like what he does. I thought that character was very much him, just acting youthful, nothing more, nothing less. The side characters I thought were really good on it. That intro music did throw me, though, and the entire scene back at his school at the science fair, I didn't remember that at all either. I didn't remember his parents being that stupid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so that kind of threw me. Once he got to school, though, that's where I started to feel like, you know, comfortable. Oh, yeah, okay, now I remember this. And
exactly.
And everything just rolled exactly how I remembered. Even the part where the Asian guy said when the ice turned to vapor, now we just have to keep it from exploding. And Kent, like, panicked and ran into his room.
Yeah. very good. And quickly, how about you there, Rob?
I loved it. I loved it back in the day. I love it now. I haven't seen it in a lot of years. I would say I'm borderline on letting the kids watch this. I don't know if your kids watch this. So just a
no.
few jokes that were a little bit, you know, I don't need my 11-year-old running around saying, you know, certain words, you know. But no, it takes me back to that time in the 80s where everybody dressed cool and you know, you had this future where you thought, well, you could still be smart and you could be cool. You know, you're going to go to college and there'll be all these wonderful things and there'll be parties and I don't know. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I like the fact that the kids outsmart the grown-ups at the end too.
Yeah, it you know, here's the thing with these movies for me personally, I kind of have a couple different libraries, I guess you'd say, digital libraries and physical media too. You know, I have the, you know, my Star Wars and Back to the Future and, you know, stuff like that where I have to have the physical media of it. And then I have my digital media and I've kind of got two kind of separate libraries where I have the stuff that I'll occasionally watch, you know, maybe once in the year, or I kind of have it accessible in case I feel like watching something. And then I have the library of, I'm probably not going to watch it, but I remember watching it as a kid, so I'll keep hang on to it. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely in the, I'll probably watch this again. You know what I mean? I if I'm at the in-laws' house and I need to kind of tuck away and throw something on, this is one that could definitely be in the playlist for me. So definitely a hit throwback reviews as far as movie content goes. It's definitely a good choice, Doug. Definitely good choice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so
glad you liked it.
Thanks for bringing this one on. And, Doug, dude, thanks for coming on. I appreciate you coming on. It was a great time.
Oh, yeah. Tons of fun. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. And thanks for adding me to the network. I don't know that I deserve to be there, but thanks.
No, definitely. We're glad you came along, man. Definitely glad.
Well, thank you.
Why don't you tell everybody about the podcast that you do over at McCoy Cast?
Right now we got three shows. And, you know, I think the McCoy Cast podcast name's kind of silly. I realized lately I borrowed that from the Zerbinator, who was just doing a series of shows under Zerbinator Land. And, you know, I said, hey, I want to do that too. And so the one is Crazy Creepy Cool Movies, where I just talk about mm-hmm. these really insane horror low budget movies I saw on TV and as a kid. The other is 80s Anthologies episode by episode, where we talk about Twilight Zone 85, Alfred Hitchcock Presents 85, and all the other anthology series from the mid 80s. And the third is Never Seen It, where my wife and I watch a movie, classic 80s movie, which one of us has never seen, and then we discuss it. So those are the three shows we've got going right now. And when those end, as they eventually will, then I'll bring something else up. I've got lots of ideas, so just having fun.
Yeah, we'll keep them coming. We definitely enjoy them, and I love the idea of never seen it. I know my wife and I, we threw around an idea of something similar to that at one point, but she, unlike Heather, she's a little shy to get on the microphone. I've been trying to get her on Throwback Reviews, and we're on episode, 20 now. So, you know, that's awesome that your wife, Heather, will record with you. That's very, very cool. Nice kind of capsule to have down the road. You know, you can listen to 20, 30 years down the road from now. Your daughter can listen to it and hear mom and dad talking about some movies. And it's really cool. And Vic, who is on our show on the Dungeons & Dragons, which we I forget how you put it, but he was cheating on you. He came into the Dungeons & Dragons. He's also on the 80s Anthology podcast. So definitely, yeah, you can go to throwback.net. You can find his stuff there, and there's a link on the sidebar for all the shows, including McCoycast. We'll just call it that, which will take you to Doug's website with all his stuff. So check it out. And again, thanks a lot, Doug, for coming on. It was a great time. Pleasure having you on here.
Hey, thanks again. Really appreciate it.
And Dor, what about you, man? What do you got to closing words and plug and stuff like that?
If you want to know more about me, just go to podnuts.com. Whole bunch of different podcasts, whole bunch of different topics with the only goal of just having fun.
Yeah, well, I think that's why we all do this, right? Mm-hmm.
I thought we were getting paid for this.
Yeah, your check's coming, I promise. Oh, okay. After the new year.
I can check in the mailbox every day.
It's all back pay.
You're right.
And Rob, why don't you tell everybody about your new project that you have going on, which you can still find over at the network.
Yeah, I did kick off a new show. The first few days of the furlough, I think we didn't think it was going to last very long, so we were just kind of sitting around waiting to go back to work. And once we figured out it was going to last for a while, I thought, you know, this is really a blessing if you look at it. I mean, we're hoping to get back pay, but this is time off from work, and it's time that we can use, you know, for doing little projects and stuff. So I've had this project idea for a while, and that was putting up videos of me playing Commodore 64 games, you know, from my book Commodore, you know, the Commodore is the computer that I grew up with in the 80s. And so I launched Sprite Castle, which is we joked about it being a tube cast. It is video recordings. I'm trying to keep them around 10 minutes in length, which, you know, is very difficult for me because I can talk for 10 minutes about nothing. And they are basically just recordings, not very in-depth. They are brief reviews of Commodore games, so you can watch the video of the gameplay, and you can see my little face down there in the corner. And you can I've seen some people said that they're asking me, like, I guess some people subscribe to YouTube channels or wanting to know if I have an RSS feed or whatever, but the easiest way is just to subscribe to that throwbacknetwork.net, and you know, you go there and all the new episodes pop up on there. So that's the easiest way to find them.
Yeah, and go check it out. I love the new podcast, or vidcast, or tubecast, or whatever the hell you want to call it these days. The video of you playing 64. My brother had a Commodore 64, and just like I had talked about earlier, previous cast, about watching my brother, my older brother, play Joust. I sucked at Joust, but I loved watching my brother play, and I just remember sitting there in the small kid chair next to my brother with his Commodore 64. So brings back some great memories for me. So definitely.
That in the list. I'll be sure to do Joust here pretty soon.
Very cool, Rob. I look forward to seeing some Joust on the old Commodore 64 Sprite Castle. It's going to be a good time. Well, let me just say before we head out here, thanks for everybody that's been downloading the podcast, subscribing. We really appreciate it. Everybody that's gone over to iTunes, left us a comment. If you haven't done that, we really appreciate that. It helps us in the iTunes standings. And if you're on Facebook, head over to our Facebook page. It's Throwback Reviews Podcast. Go over there, like our page. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Throwback Review. That's our Twitter account. And if you like what you're hearing, you want to help us out, maybe defer some of the costs of our hosting plan, stuff like that, here's a simple way you can do it. If you shop at Amazon, instead of going to Amazon.com, just go to throwbackreviews.com/Amazon, and that'll help us out. That's our affiliate link, and any purchases made through that link will get a little kickback from Amazon thanking us for sending people over there, and that really will help us out as well. So that's going to wrap up this week's episode of Real Genius. We thank Doug again for coming on, and until next time, thanks for listening.